A funny thing happened to me as I was preparing for this liturgy, and it's connected to our pondering group last night. The men's pondering group was last night. And so we were pondering next Sunday's readings, and in the readings, in the gospel, the disciples are arguing about who's the greatest, and then Jesus takes a child and says, you have to be the least of all. If you want to be first, be least of all, and you have to accept this little child. Whoever accepts a child is first. You know that passage. So about being great, about greatness, and about children, I saw it. And I read, after the pondering group last night, before I went to bed, I read these readings. I said, well, this is great. Perfect. The first reading talks about the greatest of the spiritual gifts, love, and it also talks about something about children in the negative sense. Or when I was a child, I used to talk as a child and think, I said, this is perfect. And then the gospel, again, about children and about greatness. And I said, well, but then I realized, no, that's next Sunday. Our method is to carry the theme from Sunday throughout the week. And here I was backward. And last Sunday, what was who do you say that I am? And not thinking according to human thinking, think of God's thinking, and about the importance of taking up our cross and following the Lord. And you know, that's too much for one little mind to put in. I mean, it's too much to carry. Well, last Sunday, next Sunday, and then today. When I realized, oh, that's backwards, or it's too far forward, or whatever, I said, I don't know how to put it all together. Although I love that connection, because I mean, greatness is what we're called to, and greatness is our problem when we're striving for it in the wrong sense. And the example of the child has a positive sense and a negative sense. So let's look at today's readings, ponder today's readings. I'll start with the gospel. It's the more negative one. And then we'll start on the positive note, that beautiful hymn to love in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. So the gospel, Jesus, who we know is not afraid to be very critical, and especially when it comes to the Pharisees, he uses a lot of very strong language to correct them. You're like a filthy cup that's beautiful on the outside. You're like a whitewashed tomb. You're a bunch of hypocrites and all these things. But in this reading, he's much gentler. Well, and he's speaking to the crowd, so he does this in a very, I think, a very wise way. He starts with the question, to what shall I compare the people of this generation? What are they like? And you can imagine them thinking, yeah, what are we like? Yeah, well, and if they had enough time to think about it, they'd probably come up with some good comparison. Well, maybe we're like the prophets of old, or we're like the faithful of old, or maybe like the Maccabees, you know, we're opposed to a foreign domination, or some positive comparison. In our generation, I don't think we're that, although we can be quite proud of ourselves, but you think of trying to say something about a generation, the generation of those who fought during World War II are usually called the great generation, or what is it called?
The greatest
generation, because of their sacrifice and their dedication to a cause, and they are great. But anyway, so he asks the question, and you think, what did they get in their minds? And then he drops this comparison, well, like children. It's gentle, but it's quite strong. Maybe in our way of doing it, we would say, grow up, why don't you? Why don't you just grow up? I mean, that's a maybe bad, that's not how Jesus, that tone, he wouldn't have taken that tone, but like, why don't you just grow up? Why don't you get over yourselves? This is not all about you. And that's the problem. I mean, we played the flute and you didn't dance. We sang a dirge, you didn't weep. You didn't do what we expected. You didn't do what we wanted. And we're complaining about you. Like spoiled children, like self-centered children. And that, so Jesus' comparison is, you're like a bunch of children. You don't really want to submit. You want your own way. So that's, it's a gentle way of saying it, but it's also quite critical. And then he makes the application, which is brilliant. How did you receive John the Baptist? You received him like you were expecting him to dance, and he didn't. And then how did you receive the Son of Man? How do you receive me? You expect him to be weeping, and he's eating with tax collectors and sinners. You're establishing a criteria that God doesn't follow. And it's your fault. They're just like children who are demanding having things their own way. But wisdom is vindicated by all her children, as if to say there's a different group of children that are not making their demands. They are wise. They are children of wisdom. They're willing to receive the wisdom that comes from God. You could say this is another lesson on what we learned Sunday, the distinction between thinking according to the way human beings think and thinking the way God thinks. The way human beings think is like the children in the marketplace. Well, we want things our way, and when they're not, well, then we complain. But the way God thinks is the way the children of wisdom think, because wisdom comes from God, and if we have any wisdom, it comes from God. So it's not merely human wisdom, but divine wisdom. Okay, so it's a correction, but it ends on a very positive note. Be children of wisdom. Receive rather than demand. Then we move to the more positive reading, this beautiful reading about love. It's one of the most famous passages about love in the whole Bible. I'm sure you've heard it many times. Anyone who has ever been to a wedding has heard this reading. And it's good. I mean, that's a great reading for a wedding. It's a great reading for any time. In fact, this reading alone gives us plenty to ponder. It's a whole meditation on love, and we can apply it to ourselves. Do we love? Do I love? Do I even know what love is? When it comes to pondering, by the way, I mentioned the men's pondering group. I hope that didn't give a negative. It's very great to have a pondering group. I just got a notice that in the Philippines, they're renewing some of the pondering groups among the members, and I'm very happy for that. I'm a big fan of pondering groups. You know, we grew that group last night. They're quite disciplined. They start exactly at 7 and they end at 8. And a full hour of pondering. And at the end of it, you get a good exposure to all the readings for Sunday. And I know what I love about this is that when we get to Sunday, though, that will be in my mind already. So I love that. I'm all for it. And so when I said it, I got distracted by it, or I got confused by it, I'm not saying anything against doing it. It's just that I'm not used to spending a whole hour on next Sunday's reading so early in the week, although it's a good thing to do. Anyway, what we're pondering here is this hymn on love. And it's the greatest spiritual gift. Let me show you a still more excellent way. There isn't a more excellent way than this. The way it's set up here, has these three paragraphs. In the first paragraph, it emphasizes that love or nothing. If you don't have love, you're just a noisemaker. You're nothing. You have nothing. If you don't have love, no matter how great your gifts are, or great your accomplishments are, or how great your sacrifices are, it's love or nothing. We think of love as, you know, roses and sweet perfumes and, you know, posters. it's a very strong description of love. Nothing else compares. And then in the second paragraph, the even more famous part, love is patient, love is kind, love is not jealous, not pompous. Some people have this memorized. I looked in the Bible, it had a little footnote. It said what's actually given here is 15 Greek verbs. 15 Greeks are what love does and what it doesn't do. In English, we can't do that because we don't have a verb for being patient. We can't say someone patience or someone kinds. We have to say that someone is patient, and that's an adjective. And the little footnote said, in English, you have to use more adjectives. We don't have enough verbs for this. But that love is all verbs. It's all doing or not doing. I love that. Love is an action word. It's something that it carries, it has a momentum of its own. And then these descriptions, my goodness, more negative ones than positive ones, as if to say, this is where we tend to fail in love. We don't do it because we end up being quick-tempered, or we're brooding over injuries, or we're not rejoicing in the truth, or whatever it is. It's like an examination of conscience. Am I patient? Am I kind? Well, when I am, I'm loving. And when I'm not, is that, then I'm nothing. I'm just a lot of, I'm a noisy gong or a clashing cymbal. Then the last of the three sections, love never fails. It again launches our understanding of love to the highest. It's higher than tongues and higher than knowledge and higher than prophecy. And it's the capacity of a mature person. We're not talking about childishness here. When I was a child, I talked like love as a child does. And when I was a child, I thought about love the way children do. And as we learned from the gospel, that's not necessarily a very good thing, because children, when they're very young, they're beautiful because they're just who they are, and there's no selfishness to them. But after a few years, you know, get to a five-year-old or so, they can be very selfish. And in fact, they can't help it. They're only thinking of themselves. But Paul says, when I became a man, I put aside childish things. I grew up. I took on love. And, you know, maybe right now we see indistinctly, but and partially, but then I shall know fully as I am fully known. So fully known by God is to be fully loved by God and to know that I'm loved by God. That's what we'll know in heaven. And our response will be to love him. Faith, hope, and love remain these three, but the greatest of these is love. It's just beautiful. Maybe you remember that movie, The Mission. I've used this example before in that movie, The Mission, which is old. It's an old movie by now. It's probably, 40 years old. But there's that character, the Robert De Niro guy. I can't remember his name in the movie. But anyway, Robert De Niro is a great actor. And he plays this, you know, bad guy. He's the slave. He's the kidnapper of slaves. And, you know, he finds his brother in bed with his girlfriend and he kills him. And he's brooding over injuries and he's rude and he's jealous and he's got all the things that love doesn't have. He's a bad guy. And then, with the help of that priest, the saintly priest in the movie, he experienced this amazing conversion. You know the conversion. And so now he's been forgiven by the very people he was enslaving. That's a great scene. But then, after that scene of the conversion, he doesn't know what to do. And the priest hands him a little Bible with this passage, and then he reads it in the movie. It's really worth going back to. It's beautifully read. It's slowly, you know, love is patient, love is kind. Like you can imagine the character, the bad guy, like taking this in. Like, this is a whole different way of life. How can I not be the bad guy anymore? Well, love is the way. And the movie portrays it beautifully. Anyway, that's the pondering of it. The greatest of these is love, and that's the thing that remains. We can look beyond our present state in which we exercise faith, hope, and love, the theological virtues. In heaven, we don't exercise faith because we see God face to face. We don't have to see by faith. We see by presence. Hope, we don't exercise hope in heaven because we already have accomplished what we have. But love, we do. We still exercise love in heaven because that's all we do in heaven. We are loved and we love, and that's heaven. So, gosh, the scriptures are telling us, don't be sitting in the marketplace insisting on your own way. No, be mature and grow in the way of love.